This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave in for Terry Gross. That's music from the Garth Fagan Dance Company's performance In Memoriam, The Innocent, The Brave, The Hands, The Minds, a dance dedicated to the victims and survivors of September 11th. It's part of the company's new season, which opens at the Joyce Theater in New York City tomorrow, and features a premiere of Garth Fagan's latest work, Music of the Line, Words in the Shape. Fagan founded the company 31 years ago, and ever since his work has challenged assumptions about gender, race, and political correctness. A native of Jamaica, Fagan incorporates into his choreography African and Caribbean dance, extreme athleticism, hip-hop, and balletic movements, and sets it to widely divergent music, forging collaborations with such composers as Wynton Marsalis and John Cale. Fagan has also worked on Broadway. He won numerous awards, including a Tony and Britain's Laurence Olivier Award for his choreography for the Disney musical The Lion King. When I spoke with Garth Fagan about his piece In Memoriam, I asked him if he had a sense of what consolation people sought in dance.
Not per se, but for me, I was brought up in a family where the arts were always there at times of celebration and at times of sorrow or tragedy. So that's a place I go immediately. I just think that the arts can say so many things because so much is open to interpretation, you know. I mean, in dance at any rate, or even in the visual arts. So much is open to interpretation that you can take your grief, your pain, your ecstasy there and illuminate it, analyze it, or put it in some kind of perspective. And I'm hoping this is what this does. The score for this piece is by Cristobal de Morales, 16th century composer, and it's based on the Book of Job. And as human beings, we all go through Job-like situations, from birth to the end. And I thought it was very appropriate that music be used. So it was a universal lamentation.
I was thinking that there are many different directions you could have gone with a memorial dance, more towards grief or poses of grief, and that's not the intent here. This has more of a triumphant feeling. An evocation of bravery. What was your thinking behind that? And how does it reflect your own personal response to September 11th?
Well, I lost an infant child about 25 years ago, and 3-year-old, and that's like awesome grief in a car crash. So I have some idea of what that is. My parents are both deceased, but they lived their lives, you know. And all these people just went to work or were going someplace, you know, not involved in the fracas at all, and then they're gone. But what I wanted to do was to give a glimpse of mankind. You get the work motifs in there. You get the sensual motifs in there with all of the pelvic movement. And you get the prayer motifs, and I was careful not to make it any kind of religious prayer. I just wanted supplication. And then at the end, with the turn-offs, which the Sinead turns off stage, that's where it could be triumphant is the wrong word, but they're freed, you know, from the movements of supplication and the bent, twisted bodies. Then you get these eight people just turning off into the wings. It doesn't leave you down in the dumps. It gives you an idea that as a human being, despite this outrageous tragedy, you can go on. You must go on.
You were born in Jamaica. What was your first dance memory?
My first dance memory was really like party dancing, you know. I come from a family of 13 aunts and uncles on one side and 7 on the other side. So there were always parties. You know, somebody's always having a birthday or a graduation or whatever. And everybody danced, right up to my grandparents, everybody danced. And we didn't have the age-specific parties that are so trendy now. We had parties where you had from children through grandparents, and everyone danced. And but the idea of concert dance or professional dancing never occurred to me. It was just a fun thing that you did. And Ivy Baxter, who was the director of Ivy Baxter Dance Company and who forged Caribbean dance and modern dance into a nice synthesis, she saw me in high school and I had to fill in for someone who had sprained his ankle or something. And I did it on an outrageous deer. And I knew it would upset my father because he was an Oxford graduate, very British gentleman, and Fagans just didn't do things like that.
Someone hurt their ankle and you, who had no dance experience, said you'd fill in for them?
Well, I was very athletic and was quite the party dancer. You know, had won awards in cha-cha and mambos and what have you.
At dance contests?
Yeah, dance contests. So, I mean, it was a thing to do. And just on a deer, I did it. And all I did was I listened to what this lady told me to do. And totally unbeknownst to me, I went out there and did it. And people said, "You were great." And I said, "I was what?" You know, because it didn't feel great to me. It was, "What do I do next?" You know, and blah, blah, blah. And she invited me to come to her studio and start taking classes. And she also showed me Martha Graham's A Dancer's World, which is one of the most beautiful films on dance and on art. And Martha, well, you know, what can we say? What an amazing artist and person. And that showed me Mary Hinkson, who became one of my teachers and still my mentor and priestess, and just showed me the possibilities of concert dance. And I also saw men dancing in a very manly way, because as a teenager back then, I didn't want to be a swan prince or anything like that. Now that I'm an adult, I understand the value of swan princes. But as a kid, you know, I wanted the more athletic stuff. And she had wonderful dancers.
You founded your first dance troupe, your only dance troupe, Garth Fagan Dance, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And back then you picked untrained dancers. Mm-hmm. For the troupe. Why'd you do that? These were people who had no contact with dance. I guess
right,
as you did when you were young.
Right. They were people that I saw at parties who had this really wonderful sense of movement and rhythm, and people on the soccer field or the basketball court, you know. And I wanted to come up with Fagan technique, and I wanted to break the mold. And I didn't want to spend time on training people who had, you know, classical training or major modern dance training. I just wanted to do something new. And I wanted the speed and precision of ballet, the love of weight and the floor of modern dance, and the polyrhythms and the use of the torso that you find in African and Caribbean dance. And I wanted to forge that into a new blend.
Garth Fagan is the founder and artistic director of Garth Fagan Dance. Their new season opens tomorrow at the Joyce Theater in New York City and runs through November 11th. We'll continue our conversation after the break. This is Fresh Air. Back with choreographer Garth Fagan. His Garth Fagan Dance performs at the Joyce Theater in New York City, October 30th through November 11th. That will be their new season. Fagan is the founder and artistic director of Garth Fagan Dance, also the Tony Award-winning choreographer of the Disney Broadway musical The Lion King. I think you see a lot of modern dance, and it looks like dancers are trying to look like real people while they're dancing.
Yes.
And it strikes that false note. But watching your company, the dancers look more like real people dancing.
Yes.
Is that a result of the technique, or your philosophical infusion to your dancers?
It's a result of the technique and the philosophy, because from day one I didn't want them to do the self-congratulatory thing. You know, a dancer does some fabulous turns and then looks out at the audience for applause. You know, that kind of vulgarity I found boring and tedious. I mean, it is understood that you're professional. People got babysitters, got on the train, and came to see you perform. So now do it. And it was very important to me that you get the sense of people dancing as opposed to hybrid-mannered dancers trying to be people.
I love how the women in your company dance. They are so, so equal to the men. They're just as athletic, just as fast, but they do it without sacrificing the sensuality of their movement or their femininity. Could you talk about creating that? Was that a political decision on your part, that reaction to that girly princess status of the ballerina?
Yes, yeah. That was a decision that I made. A, to celebrate my daughter. B, because the women that I know and respect are not waiting for any prince to carry them off or tell them what to do. They have a good idea of what they can do and what they ought to be doing. And the whole girl-boy thing annoyed me. These are adults who are dancing. And if the men can turn that fast, well, why can't the women? If the men can leap that way, why can't the women? And by the same token, my women are strong and direct and fabulous. But by the same token, my men also are not just macho, you know, soulless beasts. They have to be vulnerable and open also. But I consciously wanted to do that so that you had this sense of humanity. And then gender and race came down the road, you know, after you'd enjoy the dancing.
I'd like to talk about your work on The Lion King. You choreographed the Disney Broadway musical, directed by Julie Taymor, and won a Tony Award for your work, and also the Laurence Olivier. Now, in a musical, dance is not the focal point. It's just part of the whole. How do you adapt your choreography to not stand out too much?
Well, you need a seamless whole. You know, you need the evening to be a seamless whole. And there are moments when the music is numero uno. And then there are moments when the dancing is numero uno. And there are moments when the entire parade flows before your eye. And this involves music, costumes, lights, and dancing. And you listen carefully to the director, in this case, Julie Taymor, and hear what her ideas are. And then you go ahead and you forge your own ideas. I had decided and told Julie and everyone that I wanted all types of dance in this musical, because I wanted children who came in to see, you know, modern dance, ballet, hip-hop, African dance, jazz. I wanted them to experience as many of the dance forms as exist, and just kids fooling around, like, you know, I just can't wait to be king. It's just kids fooling around the way kids would do in a bedroom with a pillow fight, you know. For me, the newest thing was the use of Julie's wonderful puppets and elaborate costumes, which in concert dance, I like clothes as minimal as possible, so the human body, which is the dancer's instrument, is seen without much distraction. So I had to use those and use them well, and I had to realize that people were hyenas in this section, and then there were lionesses in the next section, and then there were giraffes. Anyway, it was an amazing experience, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it was quite enriching for me.
Did you try and play against people dancing too much like the animal that they're supposed to embody?
Oh, yes. No, it wasn't a stuffed suit show, you know. Julie always wanted the human beings to be seen within the costumes of the animals. So, like, the lioness dance is like a beautiful feminist tome. that shows, I mean, all the wonderful range of womanhood. I mean, and, you know, if the Lannisters don't hunt, nobody eats, you know. So let's get a grip on that one. And you have all the femininity in the world out there, but still they kill the gazelle so that people can have a meal. And sometimes we're not comfortable with the two perspectives of that being in one person and in one woman. Likewise, the hyenas are horrible, terrible people, but there is some humanity to them. So that was important, that it just wasn't stuffed suits trying to look like an animal. No, it was the way that the lions use their shoulders. I use a lot of that, you know, essence of being the animal.
So in choreographing hip-hop for The Lion King, where did you learn hip-hop, or what were you drawing on? You're an older gentleman now. I don't imagine you're doing it in
mature,
the clubs.
Barbara. Not older yet, just mature.
Very good.
Yeah, I go to a lot of parties, you know, so I see it, and my grandkids and the dancers. You know, the dancers, I have company requirements for the dancers to see certain shows, certain galleries, and they have requirements for me too, you know. And
what does that mean? You have a list of things that ways in which they should enrich their lives?
Oh, absolutely. When we're on tour in foreign countries, we go to the art galleries, we go and see their national dance or whatever they're most famous for, you know. And it expands the consciousness. And we call those company requirements. And when we have company requirements, you have to go. There's no debate, no whatever. You just go. And they love that. And then they give me company requirements too, you know. I mean, singers are dancers that I wouldn't know of in my general field. They'll tell me.
Garth Fagan, I want to thank you very much for talking with me.
Thank you ever so much, Barbara.
Choreographer Garth Fagan. His company, Garth Fagan Dance, begins a 2-week run tomorrow at the Joyce Theater in New York City. This is Fresh Air.